Hello and welcome to the first podcast in a series of podcasts for my website, and I'm going to call it the Resewn Podcast because it's going to be based on fashion history, textile history, just basically everyday fashion, everything to do with fashion, because I'm a fashion historian and I need an outlet to talk about things that I'm interested in. It's going to be called Resewn because people resew things every day. If you're making stuff yourself as a dressmaker or seamstress, or if you're making things as a fashion designer and you're unhappy with it, things are resewn. It's a term used for people who sew or into fashion, or just people in general who might know about sewing. So this is the first podcast that I've done for my new website, Rachel with an E. So please bear with me. I am recording this on my phone and don't have a proper microphone. So if there's any background noise or interruptions, I do apologise. Today I'm going to talk about activism in terms of women's clothing and activism, and how women have worn clothing to promote their political and economical and ethical views throughout history, as well how textiles can become an activist method of resistance against colonial rule, oppression, or racism, sexism, and misogyny. So we'll start off with the American Revolution. Women, before the American Revolution, sewed their own clothes, which showed their contribution to the alleviation of a long-suffering continent under British rule. This is quoted in the Boston Post in 1769. There was homespun clubs where women homespun their own clothes, their own fabric to make their own clothes from cotton made in America. Also other clothes, maybe like poplin, silk, and other fabrics would have been homesewn to show their political allegiances with the growing revolutionary movement in America. And wearing clothes made from American spun fabric showed their allegiance to the cause of liberty. One diarist called Charity Clark, writing to her English cousin prior to the American Revolution of 1776, stated that American women are a fighting army of Amazons armed with spinning wheels. So quite literally, the clothes they wore were a political statement, a political embodiment of their ideals, their thoughts, and their political allegiances, because at this time women couldn't vote in the British colonies or in America. So one of the ways that they could show their political allegiances, that maybe their fathers, brothers, husbands, friends, cousins were aligned to, was by wearing homemade and homespun American fabric and American clothing. Moving on to another revolution in the 1780s and 1790s, which is the French Revolution. Of course, the famous line is liberté, égalité, fraternité, liberty, equality, and brotherhood. And women who supported the French Revolution wore blue, red and white cockades and ribbons to show their allegiance to the revolutionary cause. And this was one of the only times before the late 1900s that women wore very, very bright coloured clothing or hats or cockades or scarves to show their allegiance to a political cause that they believed in. As after the 1790s, there came a conservative period and people really rallied against the ideals of the French Revolution of liberty, equality, and brotherhood. Moving on to nearly 40 years after the French Revolution, a very famous black suffragist, abolitionist, and women's rights campaigner, Maria Stuart, who was the first woman to speak at a mixed audience of male and female, and white and black in 1832, and the first woman in America, and I think in the world as well, to lecture about women's rights in 1832. This woman would go on to influence other black suffragists, abolitionists, other white suffragists and people with equal rights to campaign for the rights for women through equal rights, equal pay, equal chance to property, to have their children after a divorce and to divorce on the same terms as men. And it is worth to know that, particularly in America, the suffrage movement was particularly along race lines, where a lot of white women, including Susan B. Anthony, didn't particularly want black women in her suffrage movement, because they felt that first only that white women should get the vote, and that African American women were second class citizens and therefore not entitled to the vote, even though there was many black suffragists and black abolitionists that believed that all women, irrespective of their gender or class or race, including Native American women, should be allowed to vote. So women in the suffrage movement in Britain, Ireland, America, and all over the world. It's useful to note that the first country to give women suffrage was New Zealand in 1893, followed by Australia between 1895 and 1908. That is, each territory, Western Australia, Northern Territory, Victoria, etc., had different laws and therefore had different times when they introduced women's suffrage. And a lot of women wore white as a sign of purity and to show their non-supporters that they were sufficiently dressed and not scruffy and therefore not a... I lost my train of thought. And therefore not gain ire and repute from the press and people on the anti-suffrage movement. In my opinion, I don't understand why people would be against suffrage, because it's equal rights means equal rights for women and the home and matrimony and everything that could be good for the home and for men in general as well. My great-grandmother, Rochelle Belmoran, Rochelle is the Irish form of Rachel, was an Irish-speaking suffragist in Cork in Ireland, and she wore white, and I have a picture of her, I can't scan it, it's not great quality, wearing her sash for Votes for Women and wearing a white dress. And Emmeline Pankhurst, one of the leaders of the British suffrage movement, stated that sellers of the suffragette newspaper requested to dress themselves in their smartest clothes, and that suffragettes took care to appeal to the eye, particularly when in full glare of media attention, on parade or demonstrating. In 1908, one of the newspaper's Votes for Women declared the suffragette should be dainty and precise in her dress, therefore looking feminine but also campaigning for the rights to vote and gaining the right to vote in 1918, though it's useful to note that in 1918 it was only women over 30 or who owned property could get the right to vote. It wasn't until 1928 that all women over the age of 21 could vote for whomever they liked. Throughout this time, which is between about 1890s to 1914 in the First World War, there was also a growing nationalist movement in Ireland and also a growing suffrage movement in Ireland. In Ireland, the suffragist was divided along political lines, either unionist, as in remaining with the Union of Great Britain and Ireland, or nationalist, as in having home rule in Dublin and Ireland ruling herself. Irish women in the nationalist movement, in different organisations called Inghilde na Éireann, which is, I think, Daughters of Éireann, would wear traditional Irish dress and long plaits as a woman would have wore in ancient Ireland. They wore dresses that were fashionable but made out of Irish poplin, Irish linen and Irish cotton to show their aversion to the British rule in Ireland. Basically, they were wearing their activism against British rule on their sleeves, quite literally, with Irish linen, Irish poplin and Irish cotton made in homespun, like the women in the French and the American Revolution, on their arms to say, look, this is me, I'm opposed to British rule and this is how I'm going to go about it, because I don't have the right to vote, and one of the only ways I can visually show how I am opposed to British rule is by wearing Irish made clothing and Irish made textiles. This inspiration for women to wear clothing as an activism, as I've just stated, it's a long history, but also important to note that it's also very, very important to note that it's not just white women who campaign for the right to vote, and that to be a feminist, it's important to be intersectional, which is a term that was coined by American professor Kimberly Crenshaw in 1989, and her textbook definition states, the view that women experience oppression in varying configurations and in varying degrees of intensity. Cultural patterns of oppression are not only interrelated, but are bound together and influenced by the intersectional systems of society. Examples of this include race, which I've just talked about, gender, which I talked about, class. The suffrage movement in Britain was middle, upper and working class compared to, I think, the suffrage movement in America, which is very white, middle class society ladies. Please forgive me if I'm wrong. I don't know a lot about the American suffrage movement, ability, and ethnicity, which I've talked about as the black women who were also involved in the suffrage movement in America. And it's also important to note there was a lot of Indian and British colonial women involved in the suffrage movement in Britain, not just Irish women, but including Sophia Dulip Singh, who, even though Britain had taken away her father's empire, her father's country, his ruling, and all his money, still believed that women should campaign together for women's rights both in Britain and in colonial India. And the latest movie of Suffragette was quite white-centric, which I did not particularly like, but it showed women wearing the white dresses and the large hats and the famous colours of purple for purity, white for loyalty, purple for loyalty and dignity, white for purity and green for hope as the main colours of the suffrage movement. And this was on badges, brooches, sashes, dresses, hats, crockery, plates, stationery, and even their underwear, including stockings and pants. And the picture in this spot, in this blog post, shows women who were Indian women who living in England campaigning for the women's right to vote from in the British colony section of a suffrage rally in the prior to the First World War. And this woman who I've just talked about, Sophia Dulip Singh, I'll put all the information about her in the show notes, also went on to campaign for women's rights in India and women's property, education and equality rights in India. And throughout the peaceful Indian independence movement in the 1920s and 30s, many Indian women opposed the use of British cotton in Indian fabric, in Indian clothing production, particularly that the British had the monopoly on the cotton production in India. So many women, as in the American women, who spun their own clothing, and the suffragettes who wore white spun their own cotton and their own cloth and wore saris of white that showed that purity and peace against the British rule. And in the famous Salt Wars in 1930, women from all over India walked with Mahatma Gandhi to get salt, as it was again under British production and they didn't have enough for their cooking, and they went against the law and walked to the sea to make their own salt. And there's a quote that says, "Women young and old, rich and poor, came tumbling out in their hundreds and thousands, shaking off the traditional shackles that held them for so long. On that memorial day, thousands of women strode down to the sea like proud warriors, but instead of weapons, they wore pitchers of clay, brass and copper, and instead of uniforms, the simple cotton saris of village India." And that's by Radha Kumar, A History of Doing, and it was an interview with, now please forgive my pronunciation of Indian names, Kamala Devi Chattopadhyay, probably not my great pronunciation. But again, it shows that the women who wore clothing as activism is intersectional. It spans across class, gender, nationality and culture, and that all women from all cultures have at some stage in history worn clothing to oppose sexism, racism, to promote the right of women for equal property rights, equal education and the votes for women. Now we move on to the 1960s civil rights movement in America and the 1963 March in Washington. This is the famous one where Dr. Martin Luther King spoke his very famous "I Have a Dream" speech, but this is not about that. This is about the non-violent coordinating committee, the Student Non-Violent Coordinating Committee, the SNCC, who wore denim and had natural hair, as in these were black women who didn't use chemical treatment for their hair and had natural afros or natural plaits. Again, and they were going against uniform consciously used to transgress a black middle class worldview that marginalised certain types of women, particularly displays of blackness and black culture, is in that black women should be a certain way, act a certain way, dress a certain way. These were actively going against this portrayal of black women prior to the 60s, and they were embracing their natural hair, denim, as a form of activism against the Jim Crow laws and the derogatory way that black people were treated in America up to and after the 1960s. This was their physical form of saying, "This is me, I don't believe that we should be oppressed and that everybody is equal." And obviously there were more equal rights movements in the 1970s. More women wore natural hair, men, black and Indian and Irish and white women as well. Particularly, as I might stick it back a bit, in the nationalist movement in prior to First World War 1914, Elizabeth Summers and Susan Mitchell both wrote that women needed to have fashionable women's clothes made in Ireland of Irish fabrics to show their allegiance to the cause that they believed in, which the black women were doing in the 1960s. They were doing that before these women wrote this about the Irish nationalist movement, and they're still doing this today with women wearing clothing to show their political, social and economical allegiances. Most recently, there was the Pussy Hat Project, which is a knitting project that women knitted pink hats as the colour of a pussy, and the project aim was to show women's body is your own. We are on there honouring this truth and showing up for their rights. And they were claiming the word pink, as pink is obviously associated with feminine, a fragile women, and showing that you can wear pink and be strong, independent, a vocal and an amazing person. And there was a large presence of these hats in the women's marches that were across the world in January 2017, most notably in Washington and New York and across the world in London and Adelaide and Johannesburg and all these different places. And again, this is women not wearing clothing, but wearing very bright coloured textile pieces made out of wool or crocheted or made out of real wool, synthetic wool. And by wearing these, they're showing, we don't agree with the new president's views on women. We don't agree that women should be oppressed because their beliefs in abortion, their religion, where they come from, and that equal rights are human rights. So I hope you've enjoyed this podcast and that you will come back next time I do a podcast. I hope to do these bi-monthly when I get new equipment, and hopefully also do videos and make these into video type podcasts where I link down below, and also my YouTube channel. So thank you for listening, and any comments, don't forget to tweet or Instagram or Facebook me or leave a comment down below. Thank you.